Sunday you are going to be at Kane Hall and doing a talk entitled WTO Reflections, The Impact of Globalization on Food and Water. And I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about that.
Food and water have been the very basis of survival, sustenance, life. And yet the global trading system has defined both as primarily commodities to be traded by large corporations. Seattle was an amazing display of people's sense that there should be limits on commerce, there should be limits on trade. Since Seattle, the agenda for trade has actually expanded. But in addition to expanding the trade agenda, colonizing more and more countries, rushing through at Doha decisions that water would now be among the freely traded services in the WTO rules, some of this is actually unleashing the kind of extremism, fundamentalism, violence, terror that has become the source of discontent in our times. If you remember when the WTO rules were signed, the mythology used to be that there will be the creation of prosperity, and out of prosperity will come peace. And just the opposite has happened. The 5 years of WTO rules have actually triggered violence of scales we have not known in the past half century. And what I will be talking about on Sunday is the links between the emergence of new violence, the emergence of the violence of terror, of extremism, of fundamentalism, and the violence of police states, fascist states, being fed by the economic insecurities that globalization is causing by taking away people's basic rights to resources, to food and water, destroying livelihoods and economic security. And this is not just for the poor peasants of India. The collapse of Wall Street is showing that this economic insecurity is the outcome of an economic system that puts trade before livelihoods, corporations before citizens.
Yeah, it seems ironic that this country is currently waging a war on terrorism, and yet it is the birthplace of these corporations that in fact are reaping terror across the planet.
Well, you know, at the time of the very, very tragic events of September 11th, when innocent lives were taken, during that week I was traveling in remote tribal India, where as a result of globalization policies, which have destroyed the capacity of the Indian system to allow subsidized food to reach the poor or farmers to be able to grow food and retain it by not spending all their money on expensive seeds and chemicals. In remote areas, people have started to die of starvation as a result of globalization policies. And that's where I was when the world was mourning the victims of the Trade Center disaster. But there is very little mourning for the millions whose lives are being extinguished by denying them their right to food and water, their right to livelihood. And I think September 11th was a wake-up call. And we still need to pull people out of slumber to recognize that there are different forms of terrorism, there are different forms of violence. And just because the violence of the powerful is rendered invisible, it doesn't mean it is less destructive to life on earth and denial of the freedom to live of people and everyone born, no matter what their race, no matter what their age, no matter what their religion, has a right to security. And the first form of security is really for people to be able to sustain themselves. And that's where the issues of food and water come in. The violence, institutionalized violence of the global economy, is showing itself to be totally non-sustainable, totally bankrupt. The costs are too high. And I think we need to use the combination of September 11th, the combination of the wake-up call that citizens gave in Seattle during the protests against WTO, and a wake-up call from Wall Street now indicating that people have put their faith and trust in something that didn't deserve that faith and trust. A fictitious economy where you cook up figures and make feel they're gaining wealth, where we are destroying the basis of real wealth of people by destroying the land, the water, the biodiversity, and denying people their rightful access to this.
So are you hopeful that perhaps we are at a very key point in history where we can effectively change this?
I believe we are not just at a key point in history. I believe that we are at a key point in the evolution of humanity as a species. That if we continue to push these violent economies, violent systems of governance where guns replace democracy, where we allow the power of bombs and bullets to be the decision makers of our time in the name of freedom and democracy, we keep going down this way, we are making life unlivable ecologically and socially for our species. That we could, on the present trend, in the present structures, with the present institutions, actually see the humanity will extinguish itself as a species on this planet by destroying the conditions of ecological survival and social and political survival. We are at a watershed. There's huge innovation happening. People are actually reshaping freedom. People are creating new economies, what we call living economies. People are reinventing living democracy. Those are the big movements in India. And I think we could use the crisis of today in a way that we undo not just the present crisis, but the inequalities that have been building up over the past few centuries, and reestablish a peaceful relationship with the earth, between people, and create a system in which local vitalism feeds national security and a global earth citizenship. That's the kind of multiple sense of security that we need to build in our time, not the sense of insecurity that is being created by destroying the earth's resources, taking away resources from the poor, and in addition to that, then treating everyone as an enemy. This enemy idea, the language of the evil axis, really should become something of an extremely imbecile past.
Is it just here in the U.S. where we seem to be so clueless about the dire situation of the planet, or is the rest of the world pretty much seeing the same vision as what you speak of?
Well, most of the world is very critically aware that in terms of the economy and industry and non-sustainable systems, we are really pushing the vital processes of the earth. And that's why Europe went further ahead on Kyoto. Around the world, people, consumers, governments are saying we do not really need genetically modified organisms in our agriculture. They bring us no benefits, but they create new hazards. I think on the environmental front, there is definitely more backwardness in the United States, especially in the administration, not among the people, not among the movements. But as far as the emergence and globalization of tendencies of fascism, exclusion, and violence are concerned, the seeds for that are being sown worldwide. We have experienced it in this year very tragically in India. Europe is experiencing it. The rise of the Le Pens and the Heathers is showing that as democracy is killed by economic corporate globalization, as people are denied their rights to food and water and democratic decision making, that then fuels a shift of our politics to create a double violence, a violence based on exclusive, excluding cultural identities, where every religion, every race, every person is at war with every other, instead of experiencing our diversities as our strengths. Diversities are turned into the new enemy, and that, added to the ecological insecurity, is becoming a mode of threatening our very survival as people. The current war against terror is fueling fears, imaginations, hopelessness that humanity does not deserve. And I think instead of a current war against terrorism, what we need to now do is rebuild societies everywhere across the world on the basis of living democracies, living economies, living within the limits the earth puts on us, living with compassion with all species and all people on this planet. And that's the kind of issue which we are building as civil society movements in India. It's the kind of issue we are working on in terms of creating new institutions for learning. That's why I'm here at Vidbi Institute. That's why in India we have started the Bij Vidyapeeth, which is the School of the Seed, basically for practical lessons in living sustainably, living in peace, and living in ways for the next stage of human evolution, not living in ways that we wipe ourselves out as societies and species.
Talk to me a bit more about your college, the International College for Sustainable Living, because one of the things you're doing here in Seattle prior to your talk at 7:30 is you're going to be having a reception at 6 o'clock, I believe, and raising money for that college.
The college was started last year in partnership with the Schumacher College, which is a green college in England. And it was started as a partner institute to basically do two things. The first is to combine learning with practice of sustainability. The college is an organic farm, and participants get to actually do farming, cooking, while they get exposed to the best thinkers, leaders of our time. Let me just run through the courses we are offering starting October this year. We've done similar courses last year. In October, we will, actually in August, as the moment I go back, we have a course on Earth Democracy, and it will have some of the best writers of India as the teachers. 5 days of women writers, including Arundhati Roy, Mahashweta Devi, Sugata Kumari, Vidya Rao, Kamala Chaudhary. In October, we are getting two tremendous teachers, Fukuoka, who's the author of The One Straw Revolution, and Tewolde Egzebir, who is the environment minister of Ethiopia, both teaching farming in nature's ways, how we can feed the world while protecting nature. In December, we will have Satish Kumar, the founder of Schumacher College, come back again to do a course on creating cultures of nonviolence and linking Gandhi and nonviolent responses to the violence of globalization. We do courses on biodiversity in February and on rivers and water systems and equity in water sharing rather than the water wars, about which I've written in my last book, becoming the dominant trend of our times. We are very excited that we are able to combine the grassroots experiences of India, the practical work of rejuvenating biodiversity, sustainable agriculture, and bring the best of ecological consciousness of the planet with tremendous teachers, and have that opportunity for people of the world.
And will you be discussing that further with the reception on Sunday night?
Definitely. The whole idea of the reception is both to let people know that such an initiative has been started, but also to let people know exactly what opportunities of learning there are. Everyone runs to India to see the Taj Mahal and to experience spirituality as tourists, but I really feel there's a depth in India that the world needs, as we always say, as the world is receiving the export of violence in the name of terror, India and Indian compassionate civilization needs to export compassion to the rest of the world. And that is what the institution is really about. It's about taking the deepest reservoir of Indian civilization, all the excitement of nonviolence that Gandhi equipped us with during our freedom struggle, and the contemporary global initiatives on creating a better world in which we are at peace with the earth and ourselves. Combining all that is what we hope to share in the evening reception, and I hope there will be many of your listeners joining in.
I hope so too. I want to thank you very much, Dr. Vandana Shiva, for spending some time with us today.
Thank you.